Hello, everybody. Welcome. Thanks for joining us today. My name's Mike Gibb. I run AccountsRecovery.net, and I want to welcome you to today's webinar on strategies to help maximize employee productivity and make up for labor shortages. Collection agencies across the country have become masters at doing more with less during the Great Resignation, using technology, outsourcing to nearshore locations, and adapting hiring practices are just some of the strategies that companies have used. In this webinar, which is being sponsored by Peak Revenue Learning, we have a panel of experts from across the ARM industry here to share how they are managing to maintain employee productivity at peak capacity, even though they may be working with fewer employees than usual. As I mentioned, this webinar is being sponsored by Peak Revenue Learning. Peak Revenue Learning's knowledge source will help you take advantage of the spacing and testing effects. These concepts have proven to be among the most effective methods of learning improvement and knowledge retention. The focused iteration training capabilities of Knowledge Source will have a major impact on employee understanding and application of the skills required to collect more money and the laws and related policies and procedures staff members must be compliant with. I'm going to put a link in the minute that put a link in the chat in a minute that you can click on to check out Peak Revenue Learning online. And we'll be hearing from Chris Rickman of Peak Revenue Learning a little later in our program. Let me introduce you now to our panelists. Mike Hiller is a transformational leader who encourages innovation and change. When asked, he says he's a workaholic and a work in progress, preferring servant leadership archetypes over all others. He has over a decade of experience in operations and executive management roles. He has served as vice president of collections for American Profit Recovery since 2012. Mike is a licensed collection manager in Michigan, has served as a subject matter expert for the Michigan Department of Licensing and Regulatory Affairs, and is currently serving a four-year term for the Michigan Board of Collection Professionals, where he was recently voted chairman. He also served as a consultant with Test Incorporated, a mentor for graduate students, and a tutor in advanced statistics. Elisa Klinonis is chief of staff at CCMR3, a leading provider of accounts receivable and collection services. As chief of staff, Elisa provides direct support to CCMR3's co-founder and CEO, Jake Corleone, and serves as a strategic advisor to the company's leadership team. In addition, she oversees all day-to-day administrative, HR, and operational activities, ensuring cross-functional business projects stay on task. Since becoming the company's first female employee in 2014, she has provided value by serving in key management and operational roles as the company grew. Her experience includes managing all levels of employees, overseeing company-wide training, managing collection software development, and client services. Dan Medina is the director of operations at Gulf Coast Collection Bureau, a position he has held since joining the company in January 2017. Prior to that, he was a consultant with Tech Services Group and director of information management with Stellar Recovery. Our format for today will be a panel discussion. This means questions from you who are watching and listening are encouraged. To submit a question, just drop it into the chat or hit the Q&A tab on your Zoom webinar control panel. And I'll remind everybody, if you're a little skittish about having your name associated with a question, using the Q&A tab does allow you to submit your questions anonymously. All right, with that, let's start our conversation. A number of companies, for example, as one thing we'll talk about first, have adopted more flexible scheduling for employees during the pandemic. Is that something that can continue as a means of helping companies make sure they have necessary coverage for peak call volumes? And Dan, I'm going to let you kick us off today.
Yes, first I'd like to apologize for being late.
That's all right.
But
nobody
definitely
knew it was you. It could have just as easily been somebody else. I appreciate you falling on the sword, though.
Yeah, definitely. You have to be flexible. We're starting to do our first shifts where we have split shifts, meaning somebody is purposely choosing to take 2 to 4 hours in the middle of the day and break their shifts in half and essentially, you know, work shorter half shifts in the beginning and then closing. It's helpful for us because usually we don't have people that want to do the closing schedule. Other things that we did earlier on in the pandemic, which is still available to our employees and occasionally happens, is we're allowing them to work 10-hour shifts. So they can do 4 10-hour shifts. And I usually recommend they take that fifth day off, being the middle of the week, seeing as Wednesdays and Thursdays are typical slowest collection days. So certainly, I think it's going to keep going on into the future, even with work-at-home folks.
Mike, Elisa, anything you want to chime in on as we talk about flexible scheduling?
I think the key word there is going to be flexible. There's not going to be a perfect box that fits for every company when it comes to work from home or work within the office. But each company has to find, you know, the business need. What's the business need for employees and where do we need them most? And then create flexibility as much as possible around the company need. But it's not, I don't think there's any more, it's not a cookie cutter thing. It's not one size fits all. You may have full-time office employees, but maybe what we've learned is that with the COVID and everything and work from home, that, yeah, the expectation is you're in full-time, but there's a lot more flexibility. If you're sick, you have sick children at home, school vacations, things like that, you now have the ability to say, okay, you don't have to burn all your PTO and vacation time because you have to attend to, you know, life issues outside of work, but instead you can save your vacation time for actual vacations and work from home when and as needed. It's all going to depend, right? And I think what's key is that we all have to learn and figure it out together as we kind of navigate what getting back to, you know, normal routine and normal schedules look like.
So firstly, I did want to say that it wouldn't be a webinar on staffing shortages, Mike, if someone wasn't late. So, Dan, thank you. True to form. So you said a couple of my magic words, Mike, and that's peak call volumes, or what we call peak call time frames. We used to call them call hours, but it's not really an hour, so they're time frames. And when every time we've looked at it, you know, there's three peak call time frames. So morning, noon, night, right? So 8 to 9:30, noon to 1:30, and after 5 o'clock. Now, if you take into consideration 16 periods every week that are peak periods, and you extrapolate that, you know, over 250 working days in a year, what you're going to find is working 8 to 5 Monday through Friday, you're going to hit 500 of those out of 800, 62.5%. Which, I mean, pre-COVID, post, it doesn't matter. Like, that's not great, right? Unless it's baseball, that's not great. So 62% of your peak periods, 8 to 5 Monday through Friday. So put a pin in that. If you offer 411s, so that's a version of being flexible, right? It's pretty rigid still, but it's a version. You're going to increase from 500 to 650, or 81.25%, just by offering 411s. You're going to hit 650 peak time frames a year. If you layer in overtime on top of that, so 411s plus overtime, you're going to get somewhere between 700 and 800 peak periods. So at minimum, 87.5% or higher, depending on how your overtime is structured and if it's, you know, voluntary and what people take advantage of it. But suffice it to say that flexibility, you can go from 62.5% to at least 87.5% or greater peak periods in a year by utilizing that. And I'll add this, that that's per collector. So, you know, once you do the math and you figure out what your peak periods are, how many peak periods you're hitting, how many you can hit, and how much you collect during those periods, there's a multiplying effect, depending on how much staff you have, of how much more revenue you can generate just by making some very minor tweaks. But do the math. I guess at the end of the day, that's the moral of the story there.
I didn't get all that math. I didn't get all those numbers.
That's why you need to do it. You need
I
to
guess.
Do it.
I mean, from your perspective, Mike, it boils down to that sort of measure of objectivity? It's not really, there's kind of no subjectivity at all with respect to, you know, because you still got to kind of manage, like, sort of there's the whole employee morale, employee satisfaction end of it as well, in terms of the flexible scheduling. I mean, companies kind of have to look at it from that perspective too, right?
Absolutely. So you definitely would be naive if you're only looking at it in terms of the sheer numbers. But I will add this, that there was a recent study that came out, I think it was in the New Yorker, that employees were willing to take a 20% pay cut to work 411s versus 5 days a week, 8 to 5.
Was that in office or work from home?
My understanding was it was blended.
Probably in office nowadays.
does it become, you know, at least with what you were talking about with sort of it not being a cookie cutter approach, where it used to be Monday to Friday, 9 to 5, sort of the more you get away from that, the more difficult it is to manage, to make sure you've got people there for those peak hours and all the other hours in between. You know, at the end of the day, is it just sort of as long as you're collecting the same amount or more, you know, when giving people the flexible schedules, is that enough to determine if giving the employees the flexibility is worth it?
I think there's a lot of different factors that go into whether it's worth it or not, but it definitely adds a layer onto management and how they are monitoring the team. You definitely, I think, have to put numbers around it for sure, because at the end of the day, numbers don't lie. Numbers are going to tell you if people are hitting their metrics, doing what they're supposed to be doing. You know, I think something that we've kind of talked about is putting those metrics in place to where, like, okay, if you hit, you know, all of your goals, all of these benchmarks throughout the month, then you get this type of scheduling opportunity. If you don't, now you're wrapped into option B and you don't have as much flexibility or a choice. But what's not a cookie cutter. And that's something that is, I don't know about other companies on the call right now, but for us, it's kind of changed little by little, you know, every few months based on what's happening within the industry. You know, how many states are going to say, nope, you can't work from home anymore and you have to be into the office and you have to account for that. And, you know, you have to try to do it fairly, but how fair is too fair to sacrifice business need for the people? And it's a cycle, right? There's not a cycle, it's a circle of there's not a right answer for everything. And it's everybody being understanding that businesses are making the smartest choice they can in the moment with the information they have. But information is always changing. Like, the numbers
are always going to change. Our goal is to reduce essentially turnover and balance that with providing the minimum coverage. If we can provide the minimum coverage, reduce our turnover, then we start looking at, you know, are we making the most money at any given time? Because you spin your wheels a lot if you're losing people, if they're getting frustrated because, you know, they can't go to their kid's soccer game that happens every Thursday in the middle of the day or whatever it is. So we find ourselves being very accommodating and having to shift the schedules around. It does make it difficult for our floor manager who handles the scheduling. And luckily it's not me. But those are the market conditions we're dealing with. Folks will just go somewhere else if they need to. I mean, they do not hesitate. We live in an area, I live in our company, we're located in an area where real estate properties have not only increased, but they were pretty expensive before everything happened. And now they're that much more expensive. And honestly, I'm down to 3 agents in-house. Everybody else is remote and we are hiring in other states. And it's been a godsend, really. In the last two to three months, we've done a drastic change where there was a strong focus on hiring locally. We can't even find local talent. So now we just go straight out of our market area.
I think that's part of the conversation with the technology comes into play too. And what you're able to do with technology these days to account for not as many bodies in the seats.
Yeah. And we could just jump into that discussion now.
I feel like that was like the doorway. Like, okay, we're not going to have as many bodies. We're going to utilize technology and what's out there to not even necessarily do away with bodies, but, you know, work with the bodies that you do have, the employees that you do have, and how can you utilize technology to put in front of them what is going to be most beneficial for a phone call versus, you know, an automated communication.
And that's true. We've had consumer portals and client portals. We've tried doing the web chat route. It's not as productive. Same thing with like trying to do texting back and forth. It's also not as productive. But we have payment credit rules that we have for our agents, and we encourage our agents to solicit to the consumer to mention our payment portal, that they can go over there, they can visit all the time. When we do voicemail drops and we leave regular voicemails, we also mention going to our website, because that catches money, you know, 24 hours a day. Our portal functions like it's another 4 to 5 agents depending on the day of the week. So having things like a portal that's integrated with your system that has the real-time balance becomes really important. And if you can take it to the next level where you're even offering, you know, partial settlements and things like that, then you're really making your portal extremely productive. And things with like technology, hiring, we had a situation about a month ago, maybe 2 months ago, where our HR director was extremely frustrated with the hiring process and having to send out an email and confirm and concur and get this, you know, a phone interview scheduled to then do a video interview to do an in-person interview. And it became extremely frustrating. I was used to having a lot of salesmen reach out to me, sales folks, and basically throw out a link that says, hey, I'm available during these times. Book your appointment with me if you're interested in seeing my product demo. So I suggested that for our HR, and it's been revolutionary for our HR production. They use Calendly now. And when they have an agent that submits her resume, is interested in the position, they go ahead and just book an interview. We've been able to hire and get people in training in as little as 2 days. It's amazing the changes that's made.
That is huge. I looked down and I wrote that one down.
Yeah, there's Calendly.
On this side.
Calendly is the big one, and Coalender is another one, like Koala. It's kind of cute. And then Microsoft actually has a product, but you have to pay for that one. But Calendly's free. And our HR they've reduced the entire amount of time it takes to get somebody through the door.
Yeah.
Other pieces of technology are like the real-time coaching. We use a tool for that. We're able to ramp up our agents, get them to about the 120-day agent experience level within about 30 to 40 days.
Very interesting.
And we're looking at another product also from one of the vendors that sponsors some of these webinars to do after call work notes. So the agent is talking, going through the entire conversation. The piece of software is sitting there listening for keywords, you know, Minnie Miranda said, and it will standardize the notes that the agents would normally enter during their after call work. And basically when the conversation is done, it asks them to review it and approve it. They hit okay, and that's done. The after call work is done, which is now taking anywhere from 2 to 3 minutes. On average, I estimated that could probably get about another 20% productivity increase out of all our agents if we use that product. So we're looking to do that. We've had to do some staffing in-house to get some of the regular resources in-house so that we can work on these special projects. But even right now, we're fairly, you know, with a lot of technology, we're looking at that next step, those next projects.
Yeah, very similar in this idea of, you know, ramping up our operations team to be able to, you know, think a little bit smarter versus harder for the people, you know, on the phones today. Very similar thing that we're looking at when it comes to the notes. Can't remember the name of it off the top of my head at the moment, and I wish we could. Pro notes, yes, that's the one. So I know that's something that definitely will be super beneficial. And I think those it's not a little thing. It's a big thing, but that little step in the process for the collectors too, and being able to provide them with that efficiency can be looked at as a morale boost for them in their day to day of, you know, with operating with, you know, the staff that they've been working with, but not getting people bodies in the seat as fast as you really want to. But hey, listen, we can provide this efficiency. That's going to save you time. Can really potentially boost kind of that morale of the day to day that the collectors are having.
Have you guys noticed just a drastic increase in inbound calls? And if so, are you using IVRs? Are you scoring those accounts to get them to where they're going on inbounds? Anything to say about that?
No, just like in the last couple of weeks, we've seen an uptick in inbounds, but I chalked it up to, you know, the seeds that we planted with our settlement campaigns being tax season and all.
Yeah, I would agree. There's not been nothing hugely noticeable on this side.
Yeah, we generally throttle our dialer and control our outbounds based on, you know, volume of inbounds coming in. Now, doing we use a separate vendor for voicemail drops and for text message campaigns. If we're running any of those channels, that will certainly increase our inbounds. And we've been at certain times where we just have to shut off all our outbounds and only handle the inbounds at that time and start throttling those different channels down.
Makes sense.
Speaking of sponsors, sorry, I just want to interrupt briefly. I want to invite Chris Brickman from Peak Revenue Learning, the sponsor of today's webinar, to say a few words. Chris?
Thank you, Mike, and hello, everyone. We're grateful to have the opportunity to sponsor today's webinar. Our company provides Knowledge Source, a leading knowledge, skills, and compliance training platform for companies with collection operations. Knowledge Source is used by our clients to simplify and lower the cost of training both new and existing employees, whether on-site or remote. Our clients are companies that want to build and maintain a high level of assurance that their staff members have mastered and, importantly, are maintaining their mastery of the knowledge required of them when interacting with consumers. Knowledge Source automatically builds documentation of training activities of your company for existing and prospective clients and for regulators. Most of the folks that we speak to recognize the old paradigm of onboarding training followed by annual refresher training is inferior to a model where spaced, repetitive micro-learning promotes much deeper learning. Everyone is familiar with the rapid loss of knowledge following training events such as onboarding. By utilizing the focused iteration capabilities of Knowledge Source, your staff members can much more quickly master and maintain the mastery of the knowledge and skills necessary to promote high-quality compliance services. In summary, Knowledge Source will increase revenue, decrease risk, promote accountability, lower the cost of training, and help reduce turnover. To find out more about us, please visit peakrevenuelearning.com. Thank you.
Thanks, Chris. And again, thanks to Peak Revenue Learning for sponsoring today's webinar. There's a link in the chat to visit them at peakrevenuelearning.com. And I encourage everybody to do so at some point during today's webinar. All right, we've got a few questions that have come in from the audience. Mike, the first one for you. So if I work at APR as a collector, can I choose to just work during peak contact periods?
As long as you work for all the hours in between as well, yes. Yeah, we don't have a come-as-you-go model, but we do offer a lot of flexibility in terms of late-ins, early-outs, Fridays off, things like that. Again, assuming that we have hit a minimum hour threshold, which I think it's like 44 hours, and then basically, once you're there, you can have a three-day weekend or, do what you want with your time after that. But we know that, we're hitting more peak periods. Because you got to get to 44 hours, we know that we're going to have better coverage. We also offer unlimited overtime too, which if you're interested in that, call me.
You got to give a phone number, Mike.
Well, that's what I pay you for.
Okay. All right. Reach out to me.
You got a flashcard. I'll hold it up real quick.
If you're interested, reach out to me and I can put you in touch with Mike. All right. Another question. Do you provide statistics to employees to encourage them to work peak hours, or do you offer incentives or contests?
Yes. Everybody has their own dashboard in our system of record, and it reads your user ID when you first log into it. The background of our software is actually a web browser, and then that has embedded SSRS reports. And based on your ID and your role, it presents your statistics, links to your call recordings, your recorded calls, the scorecard on those. It breaks down every day by the hour, so any agent can expand. They can look at their goals, their pacing compared to everybody else in the company. They have an entire suite of information that's available to them.
That's a no on this side, but a good takeaway.
Yeah, we do. We try to be as transparent with as much data as is bearable, and then some. And then, of course, we run contests off the same metrics. We're using SQL, but it's the same idea. It's a report manager.
Okay. Question. How did you adopt remote training for new collectors? And is it effective or more challenging?
I think it's definitely more challenging to train individuals at home, at least at first. You definitely have to put some thought and time into it, but Zoom, it's a heck of a tool, as we see here right now. But I think, honestly, it depends on the level of experience of the person that you're onboarding. What previous life did they come from? Do they have experience in the industry? Do they have experience with certain platforms and technology? If they do, then it's a piece of cake. And you utilize technology to the max of its limits in getting them up to speed. It's definitely more troublesome, if you will, or time consuming for individuals that don't have, a certain level of experience or knowledge when it comes to the industry and technology. But there's recording different training sessions, webinars, providing the documentation for them. We've found ways for new collectors to still shadow and hear calls of our other collectors live, utilizing phone platforms as well as our teams. We utilize Teams internally for communication and Zoom. So you got to get a little creative with it, but I think it's still completely doable from a training perspective.
And for us, when COVID hit, we had been using two different dialer systems. We went with the one that was easier to deploy with remote agents. It also made it easier for the managers to listen to calls and maintain contact with them. We've had an interoffice chat program, Spark, that I think a lot of companies have used at one point or another. We published that through our internal applications so that our system of record and Spark are available to remote agents just by logging into office.com. They have access to office resources. That was all part of our COVID remote deployment program. And then something else that happened to us, which is fortunate and unfortunate, we lost our HR director. She moved on to some change directions. And at that time, we looked at the position because she was very busy doing training and onboarding, and we decided to break it up into two positions. We promoted from within and made a former agent our full-time training specialist, and we hired someone else from the outside to do just the HR component of that, because at that time, we realized COVID was, and with everybody working remote, was basically turning, you know, the market conditions just upside down. It was just a whole new world we were working with. So more resources.
Okay. Mike, you had mentioned scoring, I think, before. It was something I wanted to throw out there as a discussion topic. Does scoring become more important at a time when you may not have enough agents to make all the outgoing calls or handle all the call volume that you normally would?
Near and dear to my heart, Mike. I think scoring has always been important, but it's certainly more important when you need to do more with less. Think about it in terms of scaling, right? So you only have so many bodies and so many hours in a day that you can work. And so really, where's your cutoff for your scores, you know? And depending on who you use and what your model is, you know, if you draw a line and you say, okay, it's 650, that represents 33% of our accounts. Well, now you can scale up and down. You know, you can distribute accounts and work the most work the accounts that have the highest value, right? So balance and score are hand in hand, but you want to make sure that, you know, you're picking off that low hanging fruit first, getting through everything that you can collect that's easier to hit, and that starts and ends with scores. It really does. I can't speak more highly of utilizing scores. If you told me I could only have one tool at my disposal, that's what I would pick.
And that's true. We, just like every agency since the dawn of whenever TU and all the other folks created scoring, have been doing hit the top scoring accounts. But I try, when people ask me, how are you guys using score? Because I've talked to different scoring vendors and even the management here. I basically tell them the main thing I do with the score initially is I identify the garbage accounts. I know my clients would definitely hate if they see this. I apologize. But what are the garbage accounts? There's like 10, 20%. They're just almost impossible to collect upon. I set those aside. Then I look at the rest of the 80% inventory. I could probably burn through my top 10, 20% highest scored accounts within about 2 hours of all the accounts that qualified for the day. I don't want to do that either. I cherry pick those lists when it's time for my hourly pacing. I need a bump. We monitor our performance hour by hour. At any point in time, you know, 2 minutes later, I can hit refresh on my screen and see if we've collected any more money either through the portal, through direct pay files being posted, or through the collection floor. But we maintain our dialer pacing and the list that we choose to dial based on how much money the floor is making at a given point in time. So in all fairness to our clients, we want to work all their accounts. So we will have general lists with general type of demographic things that are filtered. We'll be dialing work in those accounts. If for some reason we hit a sore spot where things slow down, then we drop a list of very high score accounts, great balances, great Northeastern region, all these good attributes. And I know I'll get a bump for the hour, and then I'll move on to working other traditional inventory. And that combination is how we use the score. Now, as far as that 10-20% that I say are really difficult garbage accounts, we have a nearshore operation team, which this goes into the other question. You should definitely try to utilize those or work in that type of inventory. You can get essentially in-house resources, train them like they are remote agents working at their own homes. The only difference is they're all in a single call center in some other nearby island or South America or something like that, and let them work those difficult accounts.
That's the offshore and nearshore has come up a couple times recently for us, but we haven't taken any steps or deeper conversations around utilizing it at this point. But come that time, Dan, I might just have to pick your ear on it.
Definitely.
The do's and don'ts.
With respect to the scoring discussion, though, Elisa, is that something that you're doing at your office as well in terms of sort of managing which accounts are getting contacted at which point?
Yes. Actually, over the last month to 2 months, we have began utilizing a new scoring model, as well as, you know, playing with a couple different strategy types as to which is going to prove to be the most beneficial. So we're still kind of in that navigating what is going to be our best strategy and how can we maximize, you know, our collector time. One of those areas, as I, you know, mentioned a couple questions ago, of utilizing technology to its fullest. It's something that we haven't done a lot of historically with scoring. And so it's a new kind of way for us, which is, like Mike said, it is definitely the one that you should always have. And I can speak to that truthfully, having not had it just as recent as a year ago, to what it's going to allow us to do as it is today with the staff we have on hand and not having to, you know, increase drastically. So it's already in 2 months' time. I don't have the exact numbers and statistics at this point, but it has drastically made a difference in the day-to-day for what our collectors are getting. They're not just calling dead air anymore. They're calling people, which is good.
So one of the things that's related to this and is interesting to me as we sit here and talk about this is, you know, Reg F's kind of, for anyone who's credit bureau reporting, Reg F's kind of forced your hand now, right? You have to send a letter if you weren't before, or at least attempt to send a letter. But as problematic as that may be for agencies that weren't previously doing that, it also solves another issue, and that is the disparate treatment, right? We want to work all of our accounts because we don't want segments of the population disproportionately treated, protected, or otherwise, right? But now you send this letter. So now you're giving everyone the opportunity to know about this, exercise the rights to dispute, pay it, or whatever. So again, set that aside for a minute. That might solve some of the credit bureau issues and the desperate treatment issues. But, you know, last I saw an ACA poll or research, whatever it was, you know, the average agency is collecting 7% of their accounts. You know, a great agency might do 20%, three times that. So that means there's actually 80% garbage and 20% that's collectible, right? So imagine how much time we spin our wheels just touching accounts because our clients say we need to touch accounts. I mean, it's really, it boggles the mind, right? We kind of have it flipped on its head a bit. And I don't pretend to have a solution for that if your clients are breathing down your neck with how many times you need to touch an account every week. But I do just kind of want to open it up for conversation that it's really, you know, maybe 20%, probably less that we're going to collect. And so how much time do we waste, to put it bluntly, trying to get someone on the phone who's not going to pay, you know, and can we utilize that time in a better way? And maybe that's the IVR and the things like this, you know, and
I think another avenue that can lead into is those, what can be very tough conversations with clients, but you know, maybe looking at it as the client isn't just coming to you to perform those collection services, but also as a partner of, hey, you're the expert in collections. Like, tell me about my accounts. What do I need to know? And it's saying, hey, this is what we do. We run them through scoring. And here's what scoring told us about this population of debtors. And we will try X, Y, and Z, but the numbers don't lie. And numbers are telling us this is not going to be extremely profitable, but this is our plan in place. And we'll let you know how it goes. But I think it's just that open and honest, you know, business conversation about what they can actually expect, setting proper expectations with them of this is what we'll do. We'll absolutely work the accounts. But if you want us to spin our wheels, not going to do anything kind of thing, which it's depending on the client and what it is, it's going to be perceived in different ways. And some clients may not, you may not have that conversation with necessarily, but I think it's, you know, honesty is key in those situations of letting people know, we'll do what you want us to do. However, here are the numbers about what that's actually going to give you.
And we're in that situation where the clients want us to touch the accounts regularly. Mike?
What's that? Sorry?
Were you going to say something?
Nope, go ahead.
I'll add to this. Part of the solution for dealing with these accounts that aren't going to pay is finding alternative channels that the consumers can reach out to you. RegF has fortunately opened up email. One of the things that we do is we've added a button to our collection system. So if a consumer says, look, I don't have time to really talk right now. There's a long explanation, blah, blah, blah. Can I get your email? Can I just send you some information? And we have an email that has a button that will take them over to where to basically a web page where they can put in what their dispute, their reasoning goes directly to the our group that handles that. There's a button for, I have some insurance information. So they submit, because we deal mostly with healthcare. So they can submit their healthcare information. So then we can check if there was health insurance at the time when they were serviced. If it wasn't recorded, then it's possibly eligible to be resubmitted for insurance. So there's several different circumstances and situations that we can get those calls so that to avoid the call coming to the floor and directed to somebody in the back office. So you can certainly use email for that kind of thing. I'd highly recommend everybody set up some sort of informational email coming from a no reply email box. So the consumers don't just reply and try to have a conversation via that channel, but it is a form or a way to direct consumers to specific pages on your website so they can fill out the forms, get the information to you, and you can do something with those accounts, which more likely than not, put it in some sort of kind of hold situation while the situation is researched.
Good information. Thank you. With respect to, Elisa, going back to what you were talking about, you know, sort of that creditor communication aspect of it, you know, if you're an agency and you kind of find yourself short-staffed and you're not able to sort of maybe make as many touches accounts as often as you were in the past, how would you recommend sort of having that discussion with your clients to kind of let them know that you're still going to work the accounts, but maybe you just don't have the manpower that you would normally have at this point?
Yeah, I mean, I think a general rule of thumb for all issues in life and in the workplace is you don't bring it to somebody without potential solutions. Or potential, hey, this is an out-of-the-box idea due to the situation we're in, and let's, you know, give this a go. But I think it's, you know, times like this in the last couple of years, I think have forced all of us in some way, shape, or form to think outside the box from what we're used to. So I would say implement that same kind of thought process into that scenario of like, okay, here's what I can't do that I need to do, but how can I utilize the resources, the technology that I do have access to at this point to come up with a solution, with at least one to two solutions. Let the client know, like, hey, listen, no, this is what you're used to, but given X, Y, and Z situation, we're not going to be able to do that. However, this is what I propose that we do. Do you think that is a suitable solution? But it's, you know, the taking what we've learned from COVID and the pandemic is think outside the box. There's always a solution.
Okay. Mike, you mentioned RegF, so we'll go down that rabbit hole for a second. And I'm wondering whether, you know, the restrictions on how many calls you can make, how many attempts, how many conversations you can have, if that came along maybe necessarily at the right time, if that wasn't a little bit of a blessing in disguise, given the issues that, you know, companies are having with workforces and not having enough, you know, collectors, you know, managing call volumes. Has that helped at all?
This is going to sound self-serving, but we've always had, so what we say internally is Reg F put into words what we've always had as company policies. we've never had egregious call volumes. We've always taken an ultra conservative approach. And so for us, you know, I think you're right. I think the answer to the question is yes, I think that has helped. For us, it hasn't changed anything because now we just continue to do what we've always done.
Gotcha. Let's see a question. Many clients have contact requirements from their lenders to meet their investment requirements. Do your clients provide you with that type of information?
Yes. They have meetings with our chief operating officer, and then I hear about it since I'm director of operations. And I am told to put focus on certain clients. So a little invisible hot poker comes and I have to run a special list.
As he says with a smile on his face, that's a good sign.
You got to do with the clients right.
Dan, going back to what you were talking about before, about sort of managing volume by how much is being collected, is that something that you've kind of put in, is that something you've had in place for a while? Or is that something, you know, relatively new that you're still sort of, you know, testing and refining?
No, we've had it in place for quite a while. It used to be in management's head. And eventually I put it on a dashboard. Then everybody liked it. Then we kept enhancing it. And it's become a great tool. We went from managing our pacing monthly to daily to day of the week to now hourly. Just a great way to know that you're not leaving all the work to be done the last few days of the month, you know, praying to God for a miracle type of situation. We know where we expect to be at the end of the month, given all the current work and situations that we're looking at right now.
Are there further refinements that you'd like to make to it, or other tweaks that you'd like that you think could make it even more powerful?
Yeah, I used to, and this has to do with the fact that we've changed dialer companies a few times, but I used to keep track of not only, I have a report on my desktop and it tells me the collection floor is collected this much, this hour. Then I also have how much money is attributed to our portal, how much money in one column, how much money is attributed to our direct payments on another column, how much money is attributed to insurance. So basically, I'm keeping track of what channels the money's coming in on, and we're looking at that hourly. But I'm also looking at, I have a drill down report. So every hour, like on the floor, I can click. It shows me the payments, which agent gets credit for, and which dialer list that account was last on. And what I'm doing there is I'm paying attention to which work effort and how recent it was is causing the money to come in at that point in time. So the enhancement that I used to have is how many actual number of calls are being made per hour on the same report. I don't have a live link over to I don't have an API connection set up yet. So I need to set that up with my vendor. And I would also like to include other things like text messaging campaigns. We're getting ready to try doing one-way email campaigns as opposed to the individual consumer on the phone giving us consent at that moment in time. We have a portal, so we're capable of emailing every consumer that still has an open account that's at least registered and consented through that channel. And that is a great tool, having a consumer portal for obtaining consent, so you can reduce your letter costs also for payment reminder letters. But yeah, I'd like to include text messaging, you know, email, all the other channels, whatever's going to cause the money to flow in to keep tracking it by the hour. Voicemail drop.
Okay. We talked a little bit about nearshore call centers. I wanted to throw it out there to the three of you if there's anything else you wanted to add on whether that become, you know, that's an option that companies should be looking at. Dan, you talked about sending some of your accounts there. But Mike, Elisa, is there anything you wanted to, anything you have to say on using those types of partners to help, you know, kind of manage any issues you might be having with respect to attendance in your offices?
We haven't used any of it today. It's come up a couple times. So I guess my one question to Dan, since you mentioned you guys do utilize, is if there is one thing you were to tell somebody who may be talking about it or have thought about thinking about going that route that they should know or potentially make sure they're knowledgeable on before venturing that way.
You don't have to be particularly knowledgeable about it, but make sure you have a dedicated resource, a resource that is looking at those agents, if they're clocking in on time, are they taking extended breaks? Are they Facebook messaging while they're supposed to be working? I've actually caught one of them doing that.
we block those things. But
so you need a dedicated resource that is basically keeping track of their performance and is also accountable for their performance. Once you have that resource, then you could also step into doing what I think some of our clients do is champion challenging each other. We have a nearshore team looking to implement a second one and then just having them compete against one another to see which one's better and possibly picking one over the other or just leaving them both in place. Our clients do that. They split their inventory. They'll send half of us to us, another agency, and then flip-flop. This is a strategy that the credit card debt buying collection industry has been doing for many, many years, since at least 2002. And then suddenly, probably in the last 2 years, the medical debt collection space is starting to see it. There are consultants that are reaching out to our clients and basically saying, hey, you guys can get a lot more pickup if you just take the accounts and move them from one agency to the other. So yeah, with the nearshore operation, have a dedicated resource, have essentially what is an agency manager, but somebody that keeps tabs on them. And maybe that person that's keeping tabs on them is also commission driven to increase their performance. Because your nearshore team, when you first bring them on board, they'll have a certain minimum performance. After the first, second, or third months, they kind of flatten out and they kind of settle in place. They have the same turnover issues in their areas. And I think a lot of it had to do with COVID and the new variants that were coming out and all the scare and everything behind that. But now that things have settled down, the staffing seems to be less of an issue. Now it's more of a, hey, are you guys doing the work the same way we are? Because we're not seeing the same results out of you guys.
Thank you.
Another question. How do we keep the talent involved in the process when a client is insisting that certain accounts be worked? A special campaign can affect collectors who want to make a commission, and they are well aware that some dialer campaigns are not the best use of their talent.
Don't let them know and use creative name for your dialer list. I tell everybody, do not try to anticipate what the dialer is going to do, because our dialer manager is trained to have a certain number of dollars per hour. So we might switch it up, 2 minutes into the hour, it might get switched up, maybe 7 minutes into the hour. It could be 5 minutes before the end of the hour. We're constantly switching it. There's no point. Now, the one thing they can see is the name of the text file for the individual list that we picked and we upload it. So a lot of my list, Jack, our owner, jokes, and everybody, it's kind of a running joke around here, but the best of the best. I used to have a list that was called like the best sifts or something. And then I had the better of. The better ofs were the 600 scores, because we were already down in the 700s. Those were the best scores. So the next list was the better of. So just use creative names that all sound very, very positive. I have like a show me one, show me two, show me three, show me 1A, show me 2A for show me the money. I got tired of writing out the whole thing. So now everybody knows show me is a show me the money list. It's newer dates of service for the debt that we're collecting on.
That's the definition of thinking outside the box a little bit too, which is what you got to do. You got to keep it fun, keep it creative, and not make it dull. If you make it dull, that's when they're going to get bored. That's when they're not going to be as dialed in and invested. If you can add a level of excitement, even as simple as the name of the file that is hitting their dialer, then I'm done.
You can also use that naming scheme to motivate them. At certain times of the day, I'll put the high balance, high score list. Everybody goes crazy.
And it could be the bottom of the barrel is what you're saying.
No. I won't totally do that. But none of the lists say this is tough inventory. It'll be just the general list. And they won't know if it's slightly worse than normal or slightly better.
Do you think that the period that the industry is going through, where it's being so tough to find employees, to keep employees, and it's kind of making everything more difficult than it's been in a long time, do you see this as a short-term blip, or do you think that this is the dynamic, and that kind of given the issues that are going around in the labor market generally around the country are not going to go away anytime soon, and it's going to be challenging for companies in this industry for the foreseeable future?
I think it's a little bit of both, all the above, if you will, where there's definitely items that are coming to light about, just a basic 9-to-5 job that are going to change in certain work scenarios and what people are used to dealing with that are evolving. but it's finding a way to fit that into the, I don't want to say like the old school way of doing it, but you know, the business doesn't change at the end of the day, and the results that need to continue to show for businesses to be profitable. So it's finding a way to get creative from an HR perspective, from a culture perspective, to give people more than just a 9-to-5, because that's not what they want anymore. They want to be a part of something. They want to do something meaningful with their time. If they're spending it away from their family, away from their kids, even if they're working from home, sometimes we have people work from home that still send their kids to the daycare or they're at school. So it's, you got to make them want more than just a paycheck, more than just the benefits. They want to be a part of something. And that's, I think, the biggest thing that's not going to change that has evolved over the last couple of years.
And I agree. I think the economic forces at work are going to play the way things naturally play out. We're seeing more and more people kind of moving out to more affordable, small, middle tier cities. I went to high school in Lexington, Kentucky, so I kind of think of that type of, you know, city enough yet suburban at the same time. I think a lot of people are looking forward to living in areas like that. So people that are in bigger cities, you know, Tampa, Atlanta, whatever, they're starting to move further out. There's more infrastructure out there. There's more internet companies providing services out there. There's more capabilities for people to live in a nice suburban home that's relatively inexpensive with, you know, high speed internet, and they can have a good standard of living on a lower income range total that it would take to live in a more populated city. So I think it's just taking time for things to work themselves out. Supply chain issues are certainly complicating this. They can't just build all these new neighborhoods, you know, further outside from areas like Atlanta, because there maybe isn't enough lumber, enough steel supplies, et cetera, and all that. But I think in the coming year to 2 years, we thought this was going to be a blip for maybe 6 to 8 months. I think the shortage is here for the next 2 to 3 years. And once that supply, those supply chain issues start to become better and better, people are just going to be more dispersed and kind of spread out.
Mike?
Yeah, we're not going back to normal. I don't pretend to know what the new normal is, but I'm happy to find out. And I think it's conversations like this that, you know, maybe takes us realizing that we're not going back, and we do need to pave a path forward and figure that out and rely on each other in large part, and bounce ideas and experiment and see what works best.
Dan, a couple of questions going back to your list naming have come in. I guess maybe this is for anybody. Has anybody ever told the agents they are working a high propensity list when it wasn't? And if so, did it impact productivity?
No, I try to keep the faith. I don't lie to people. I'm a straight shooter. Occasionally, there'll be something, and I'll just name it the client name. And they don't necessarily know what that client name is, but it barely ever shows up. So how would they know it's a horrible client? I will usually blend those in. Our list can be client-specific. They can be attribute-specific. First hour of the day, like to dial people 65 and plus. Why? They're retired. They probably woke up at 6 a.m. They're ready to answer the phone at 8. I know personally, I got a few collection calls when I was younger, and it'd be like 8:45, and I didn't crawl out of bed till 9:20, and I was at work at 10. You know, I had a cushy schedule as a database programmer back in the day. So yeah, if I used to get calls, I'd be like, "Why are you calling me? It's only 9:10." You know.
Mike, I saw you shaking your head no with a question too. You don't need.
I mean, I think I know what they're getting at, like self-fulfilling prophecy, right? But I agree with Dan. I think you either blend it all up together and see, you know, what happens, or I definitely wouldn't, you know, I wouldn't try to make, you know, chicken salad out of anything other than chicken salad, like.
and we don't run one list at a time. We've run as many as like 10 or 12 lists at a time, so that's it's kind of hard to you know, guesstimate and try to play the game and figure out which list is the one that's going to hit you, because they're all going to the same hunt group.
Collectors are smart. Word gets around quick, like it.
Yeah.
Even remotely, word gets around quick.
Oh, probably faster. Because, you know, if you shout over a cubicle, you know, everyone can hear you. But if, you know, if you're sending IM, then, yeah.
Much faster. So you don't have to wait till the manager goes to lunch to talk about
that's
it.
Right. That's right.
Yeah, they can text message. They can get on Facebook Messenger on their personal laptop with the work computer working over here.
Yeah. Resourceful, if nothing else. Collectors are resourceful.
Yeah.
Well, there's a will, there's a way.
Yes. Well, unfortunately, we've run out of time. But before we wrap up, I want to go around the panel and give each of you a chance to share your summary of today's conversation or what you think the most important takeaway is. And Mike, we'll start with you.
Well, I appreciate it. And I want to share a meme that I saw the other day. It was a job description, basically. And it said something to the effect of, you know, looking for a self-starter, opportunity to grow, fast-paced, energetic, exciting. And then they had this like grayscale of a cubicle and like this old beat up chair, and it said the environment, right? And I just think that, you know, what Alyssa and Dan have talked about today about getting creative and hiring people that maybe they're not necessarily looking for a job in collections, but they do like the flexibility that a job in collections can offer. And I think Alyssa said this is, you know, thinking outside the box and really. It's a numbers game. If you know me, you know nothing, you know that, and, you know, and figuring out, you know, what those peak periods are and how to be more efficient. And, you know, it might be costly to hire someone with a college education, right? It might be costly to train. It might be costly to do all these things, but it's even more costly to lose someone. And I think if we offer flexibility and we offer overtime, and we offer some of these other things, flexible work schedules, then I think what you're going to find is it's going to be a lot easier in terms of, you know, labor shortages, because this is definitely here to stay. So we have to get better at what we do.
Excellent. Thank you. Dan?
If you're not offering remote work capability, you need to figure it out. You got to get with the bandwagon. We were hesitant initially. We did it with our existing agents, but then we tried to hire only in-house. That did not work well. The second we kind of pulled the curtains off, all of a sudden things started to get a lot better. So step outside of your market, hire remote. If you don't have the technology, get with a consultant of any sort that can help you try to get there. Probably your existing dialer company is the first step you want to be looking at. That's it.
Excellent. Thank you. Elisa?
Yeah, I think, you know, Mike and Dan wrapped it up very nicely. And I'll just add, you know, we got to continue to think outside the box and continue to leverage each other, not just within these calls, but, you know, reaching out to each other outside of this when different scenarios come up, especially when it comes to staffing and the hiring. And is it in the office? Is it out of the office? How do you do it best to make it all work? But thinking outside of the box and utilizing the connections and relationships that you make within the industry to all succeed together.
Excellent. Well, Elisa, Mike, Dan, I want to thank the three of you for sharing today. This was a great conversation. There was a lot of good information in there, and I really appreciate each of you taking time out of your busy schedules to come here and share it. Chris, I want to thank you and Peak Revenue Learning one more time for sponsoring today's webinar. Everybody check them out at peakrevenuelearning.com. Thanks to everyone who watched and listened. A lot of great questions today. More great engagement. Really appreciate that. Keep that coming. We're back tomorrow. Tomorrow's webinar, 1 o'clock Eastern. How to get people to show up for a job interview. I know that's been a problem that a lot of companies have had. So we've got a great panel with some great ideas. So if you haven't registered for that already, go to the events calendar on accountrecovery.net and sign up. And we look forward to seeing everybody back for that. Until then, enjoy the rest of your day. Thanks for being here. And we'll talk to everybody soon. Take care.
Bye, everyone. Thanks, guys.